from WXXI News. I'm Evan Dawson, and this is Arts Friday on Connections. There is an instrument in New York State of which there are only 7 in the entire state. Imagine someone telling you there are only 7 guitars in all of New York State, or 7 drum sets. Well, there's one particular instrument. You might have never heard of it, but you have almost certainly heard it before. We will tell you what it is and how you can hear it at a series of summer concerts coming up later this hour. Then we're going to get into the arts festival scene. In fact, a little bit later this hour, we'll talk about some drama. An arts festival that's been running for more than 40 years had to move. It was a bit of an uncomfortable move, but we'll talk about their happy ending and where that art festival has gone. But we start with something a little bit more familiar. On Saturday, July 11th, the Cornhill Arts Festival comes back to Rochester. It's the 47th annual, and there will be a renewed emphasis on music. So certainly not only music, but that's an interesting way to start the discussion with Elaine Lennox, who is the media chair for the 47th annual Cornhill Art Festival. Nice to have you.
Oh, thank you, Evan. It's just a pleasure to be here.
Are you guys ready?
Oh, we are so excited. Planning starts basically in August after we finish the festival. And we have a variety of committee chairs that meet. We go over what went well last year and what we're looking forward to do in 2015. And all through the year, all of our volunteers plan and coordinate this great event.
It's not that you have had no music before, but why are we saying there is a renewed emphasis on music?
Well, we've really made an effort to reach out and get some new bands and new genres of music involved. We have some very exciting band coming in from Brooklyn called Hank and Cupcakes. They're a techno Euro pop band, and they're going to bring some very cool music to the Labatt Blue Light gazebo stage, and we're excited about that. We also have a wonderful emerging artist. Her name's Lindsay Saunders. She's going to be coming to the 585 Avery Mall stage, and she has a great voice and plays acoustic guitar. Our main stage is going to have a rock band that's called Funky Blue Roots, and they're going to just rock everyone with some Hendrix and Santana, some Clapton, and we think people are going to really enjoy the whole atmosphere.
Was there a feeling that music was a little bit lacking in the past?
No, we didn't feel it was lacking. We just felt that people didn't know we have 4 stages and 28 performances. And I think people need to take a break when they come to the Cornhill Arts Festival. We are on 10 streets, and it gets tiring. So you need to sit down. You can enjoy, if you're 21 years and older, you can enjoy a cold beer at the Labatt Blue Light gazebo stage. You can taste some wine at the Glenora wine tasting area and enjoy the music. So I think that was more of the focus is, you know, it's here, and I'm not sure people know about it. So,
you brought the poster.
Yes.
It's always interesting, the poster art. So our listeners can't see it, but I want you to describe it as best you can and tell us about how it was chosen.
Okay, well, this is, we think it's just a beautiful fine art poster. It was created by Jim Mott. Jim is internationally collected. He is in museums in Europe, Canada, and the United States. He was part of a fascinating, it's still going on, a project called the Itinerant Artist Project. And this project took Jim to 29 states, and he traveled 15,000 miles. He does it 1 month out of the year, and he does it because he really, truly wants to bring art to people who would not necessarily have an opportunity to see art created, to see what art created in their location might look like. So as part of this project in 2010, he was actually hosted by Cornhill Neighbors. And he came here and he created a scene called Atkinson Night Walk. And it's a night scene on Atkinson Street, which is Rochester's oldest city street. And it is beautifully depicted in blues and some spots of color, and it has a wonderful ambiance. He describes it that it felt enchanting to be on that street at night. And I think that reflects the whole community of Cornhill.
You
got to
pull it out. I got to see it.
Okay.
Pull
all right.
Again.
Take
you're,
a look here.
I understand we're on an audio medium
right.
here. But we'll post. This has been displayed publicly now,
yes,
right?
Yes, it has.
Right,
it was so unveiled it. Last week. Yep.
So people can see it where?
They can see it online at cornhillartsfestival.com. We're going to have it for sale as the poster art. It's also going to be on commemorative wine bottles by Glenora. They're going to be highlighting their Cabernet Franc and a Riesling, so that makes nice gifts for people. The mayor and Dave Fiedler, the CEO of ESL Federal Credit Union, our presenting sponsor, helped to unveil the poster, and we're quite excited about it. We've had it out on social media, and everyone is getting a lot of, we're getting a lot of positive feedback. So
I think what makes this such a captivating image is you're looking at this, and this could be 1890 or a week ago,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing that tells you you're in 2015. It feels timeless.
Yes. And I think it's some very nice, there's information about Jim Mott on the website. If you go and look at it, there was a wonderful expose done on the Today Show about him and this itinerant artist project. But that's the feel he was looking to create. And we're just really delighted that he agreed to be our poster artist. He'll be on site Saturday and Sunday, too. So you can meet him. You can get your poster signed. And we're really excited about that.
How many artists total?
So we have 375 juried artists this year. All the artists that come to Cornhill have to submit art. And new this year on our website, you can actually view three examples of their art, and you can learn about each artist. So that's something new that we're offering the public. So you can kind of plan, hey, I want to go check this person out. Or
that's a great idea.
Yeah.
So easy to use. Again, the
yes.
website is?
CornhillArtsFestival.com.
Okay, CornhillArtsFestival.com. And three examples on each of them. So now, much easier. Now, there will be some listeners who say the joy of the festival is the new discovery, the walking the streets, you know, just, and if that's your thing, that's your thing.
Right.
But this really sort of helps you, because the festival's so big, it helps yeah. you see what you might be going to, especially if you really want to go and pick up a piece somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people collect from the artists that come year after year. We've got some new artists this year, which is always fun. We also have a guide. The city newspaper publishes a festival guide that'll be published this week. So people can pick that up and look at artists. But I think having it online and just going and saying, wow, I'm going to really check this person out, see if I like their stuff. One of the fun things we've done this year that's new is we've put our Emerging Artists Expo on Eagle Street. So in the past, we've had it in a parking area, and they haven't gotten the attention that we thought they deserved. These are 16 to 25-year-old artists that have never displayed publicly. And most of them are high school, college, and artists, and they were also juried. So we're really excited about that.
We're talking to Elaine Lennox with the 47th Annual Cornhill Arts Festival, July 11th and 12th, so just about a week away now, as they get ready for year number 47. Rain or shine, but all the rain got out of the way in June.
We're definitely hoping that yes. there's not going to be any R-A-I-N.
We don't need any more after everything that we've had so far in the spring and in the early summer. Now, when you say juried artist again, I just want to make sure we understand how that process works.
Yeah, well, we have a committee made up of 10 Cornhill neighbors, and the Cornhill neighborhood has a lot of people who are interested in the arts and who are artists themselves. So these are people who have skills in critiquing art, and so they look for some very specific things. There's no buy and sell at Cornhill. Everything is original art. So they look first to that. How is the product made? If it's a painting, obviously, that they have made it, the artist that has submitted. And they're looking for variety. We have 9 categories. We have sculpture. We have woodworking. We have leather making. We have, obviously, graphic design, painting. Jewelry is always a big popular category. And then we have, you know, just some miscellaneous. We have glass artists. So there's something for everyone. And I think, you know, in this world where you can, yeah, you can pick up stuff at a regular store somewhere, but when you collect something that's original, it's something to be proud of. And when you display it in your home or your office, you can feel good about it because you've supported the arts.
Buying directly from someone who, well, the old term of struggling artists, and mm-hmm. most artists are struggling.
Yeah.
It's just the way of the world for them. And so you feel that intrinsic good yeah. in helping them out.
Absolutely. The festival was started in 1969 on Greenwood Street. It's a great story. A few of the people just started bringing their paintings out, and they put some chairs out, and all of a sudden they decided, hey, we're going to do this again next year. And it grew pretty quickly. And but the whole point was, how do you find original art? A lot of people maybe can't afford going to a gallery and getting a higher price type item. But here's original art that you can have in your home. And people just starting out, they make great gifts, you know, wedding gifts, shower gifts, things like that. You give something to somebody that they'll always cherish and remember you by.
You have had 150,000, 175,000 people attend in the past?
Yes. Actually, we've 1 year we had 300,000.
What happened there?
It rained. Well, it rained on a Saturday and everyone came on a Sunday, and it was just... It was actually out of control, yeah. And we know that won't happen. You know, there's a lot of festivals around the area, and we know that. These are estimates, but I'll tell you, coming to Cornhill, you'll find shaded streets. We have hundreds. We have 200 volunteers to make your experience really delightful. We have free shuttle buses from 5 area lots around the city, so... You know, don't drive yourself crazy. Just go to a lot. You know, most of them are like $5. Mm-hmm. Get on that air-conditioned shuttle bus. It'll drop you right off at Avery Mall. You'll enter. You'll hear the music playing. There's food. There's drinks. There's, you know, we ask people to leave their dogs and their pets and their reptiles home because...
Did you say reptiles?
Reptiles, right. Not a big fan myself.
Did you feel like you had to clarify reptiles for any reason?
Well, you know, there's always the individual who feels a need to bring some other kind of...
A Komodo dragon
exactly,
on a leash.
Exactly, right? Okay. And yeah. It's, you know, it's dangerous for animals. I mean, point that out, that asphalt is really dangerous on hot days yeah. for animals, so people should not bring their pets. We'll ask you not to bring them into the festival. So.
I think the best thing in the festival, I don't know if we're doing it this year, but WXXI almost always has those fans for people. And you see everyone yes. with the WXXI fans, and they say, that was brilliant.
Yes. We love that because, you know, Cornhill has a reputation. We always have it after the weekend of the 4th. So it's July 11th and 12th. And it's usually one of the hotter weekends of the year, which, you know, everybody should be ready for it. We've got plenty of food and drink available, mm-hmm. but wear comfortable shoes, put a hat on, wear some loose clothing, and you'll just have a ball.
You go back to that 1969. It really was just a group of neighbors taking art
yeah.
out.
Yeah.
The first few years, even after that, mm-hmm. was it still sort of intimate?
It was. I mean, they sold like hats and hamburgers. There's a great story that one of the neighbors told me that they had collected all the money and they put it in a bag and they stuffed it under a seat of the car, and it was a convertible. And they forgot about it, and they left it out that night, and they freaked out the next day. They were like, oh, no, where did we, you know, is that money still there? It was still there. But, you know, the great thing about Cornhill is that this festival literally saved that neighborhood. This neighborhood was going to be destroyed. It was part of the, you know, 1960s, the urban renewal projects. They were knocking everything down. Part of the neighborhood was destroyed when 490 went in, and it separated them from the rest of the city. And the festival dollars go back into the community. And I think that's something people may not realize, that this festival is a not-for-profit, and the monies go back into the community. And it supports beautification projects, PACTAC, all sorts of community after-school programs, simple things like making sure kids can go ice skating, just a variety of stuff.
If the festival stopped happening, what would happen to that neighborhood?
Well, I think the neighborhood would go on, but, you know, the monies that they raise also help them to have a monthly newsletter. They have monthly concerts in August. It's every Sunday in August. You can go on the website and look it up, and they have concerts in the gazebo area. They have all sorts of events that bring people together, and that's what community is about. When you know who your neighbor is, when you've spent time with them, you care about them, and you care about what your street looks like. You care, oh, wow, you know, what's going on over there? I haven't seen Joe in a while. Let me go over and knock on the door. And these kinds, this is a very unique community, and this kind of activity is what makes a street a neighborhood.
Tell me about the historic locations in Cornhill and what's going on this year.
So this is all awesome. In 2013, Wegmans launched the Passport to Wellness Cornhill walking trail. So this is one of the first urban walking trails as part of their Passport to Wellness program. And you can go to 10 locations within Cornhill and visit historic spots. It starts at the Water Spirit Sculpture along the Genesee River. It's a beautiful, tall sculpture on Exchange Boulevard. You'll go over to the Spiritual Obelisk on Troop Street, which was part of the Fox Sisters and the Spiritualist Movement, which... Yeah, it's right?
Those are amazing stories. Really keen listeners to this broadcast will remember last year when we talked to the folks from Jiva Theater, and they talked about how it used to be a convention hall, and they brought the Fox Sisters in. And I said, who were the Fox Sisters? Well, I got an earful from some listeners. The Fox Sisters, fascinating, apparently really great perpetrators of a great hoax for many years, but yes. Fascinating story.
And that hoax was displayed by Jiva Theater. They had a play on them. And actually, Jiva is going to do a festival in August on Sunhouse. Sunhouse lived on 61 Gregg Street. He disappeared from the music scene, and he is now considered the father of the American blues. And he was found in 1964, quietly living in Cornhill, and people here in Rochester just scooped him up and said, hey, you've got to be part of the music scene again. So Jiva is actually going to do a 4-day festival about Sunhouse, and there is actually going to be another commemorative marker put in that area. His location is part of the Wegmans Passport to Wellness program. The Clarissa Street Jazz scene was huge in the 60s and 70s, and there's a marker there that marks the Pythod Club, where all sorts of great musicians and our own Chuck Mangione used to play. Frederick Douglass Village is marked. Frederick Douglass printed the abolitionist newspaper in the basement of the AME Church. One of the interesting locations on Lunsford Circle, it's not part of the wellness trail, but Malcolm X actually spoke about 2 weeks before he was killed there. And there's some very interesting articles about that. So for the history lovers, Cornhill was the original first neighborhood in Rochester. So there's so much history there. There's Ralph Avery Mall, who was an amazing artist. Ralph Avery was seen in major publications, Reader's Digest, all sorts of things, and he's a wonderful artist, and we commemorate that. And there's also the gazebo at Lunsford Circle that was moved there, and there's just so much to talk about with Cornhill.
Before I let you go, you know, now here you are 47 years in, and you expect... Yeah, you've had 300,000. That was a little much. You expect 150 to 2? What do you expect?
Yeah, good weather, we're going to get a solid 150. People come all different ways. And, oh, that's a great point. We actually have a bike corral this year on Exchange Boulevard. And part of the Bike MS is sponsoring it. They're going to be supervised. So people that want to ride their bikes, you can just ride your bike there. They'll give you a ticket. It's all going to be secured so you can just enjoy it that way. If you have a boat, you can come on the canal. And you can dock your boat and arrive that way, or you can arrive by our easy shuttle bus. So, you know, we never know, but we're hoping, we're ready for the big crowds. We have lots of porta potties. It's very, very comfortable, and we have, it's a genteel spirit. It's a family event. We have the Fairy Houses tour this year for the kids, too, by the way.
Well, so all of those things that have happened, and I just go back those 47 years to that first small group of neighbors who came out, put their heads together, put their art together, and it became this big hundreds of thousands of persons thing. Is this the size that you think it is and should be? Is this roughly the comfortable size you think it will be for a while?
I think so. I think it, like I said, there's so much going on all the time, but I think people keep coming back to Cornhill because there's something very special about it. They know that it's a safe environment, that people can come with families, they can relax and enjoy themselves. Yeah, and I think, you know, 150,000 people is about right, and we're excited to see everyone and hope that you take time and take a day off and just, like, relax a bit.
Elaine Lennox is the media chair of the 47th Annual Cornhill Arts Festival. Online where?
CornhillArtsFestival.com.
And it is July 11th and 12th, next weekend, Saturday and Sunday. Have a great time, and we'll see you out there.
Okay, Evan, we'll be sure to see you too.
So 47 years for Cornhill, 42 years for the Waterfront Art Festival, but for the first time in all 42 years, it will not be in Canandaigua. It's a big change. Lynn Crawford is the director of the Waterfront Art Festival, and since 2003, she's been working with this festival, which has been in Canandaigua for so long, and now, Lynn Crawford, where is the Waterfront Art Festival going to be?
It's going to be in Webster in North Ponds Park, which is right along Route 104. It's a beautiful park with a pond right in the middle of it. I think it's going to be fabulous.
Well, and here you are with this new home. It's always the last full weekend of July, so that's July 25th and 26th. $3 for admission, and kids 12 and under are free for the Waterfront Art Festival. But we've got to cover the drama first before we get into the festival. You're smiling, I know. But there has been a little bit of drama. 41 years in Canandaigua, why the move?
The city of Canandaigua was not as supportive as I really needed them to be for the festival. It's been interesting for several years now. And this year they decided that they were going to charge the festival approximately $15,000, which included the use of the park and the labor that they pretty much mandated that I use for city staff labor. And that cost is just crazy for a festival that's so small and doesn't make a ton of money. And on top of that, they also decided that the festival artists would not be allowed to use stakes in their setup. And if you're familiar with Canandaigua Lake, some of those storms that come blowing off the lake are just insane. 50-mile-an-hour winds. And they don't hold very well with just weights. And that's a public safety issue to me. I was having visions of artists and visitors and stuff flying. So with everything, it just felt like time to change. And Webster has been absolutely fabulous. I can't believe how excited they are and how helpful they've been. And it's just been a sea change. And all of my stress is gone. I have lots of things to do, but my stress is gone.
They wanted $15,000. Have they asked for any fees in the past?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes. Prior to this year, they retained 2/3 of the admission that was gathered at the gate. So last year, I believe their retained fees was about $16,000. And that was to cover the use of the park and all of the labor they contributed and you know, the whole thing. Last year, I actually initiated a lawsuit against the city because I don't believe that the way that they were charging the festival was legal or appropriate. And it went to court, and the judge did determine that the city could not continue to charge a portion of the admission. He did not rule in my favor on the other things that we talked about in the lawsuit. So the city basically came back and put in fees for approximately the same amount they'd gotten last year, and then decided they weren't going to provide some of the amenities that they also provided last year. So it would have ended up costing the festival at least $20,000 to do it there.
Did you feel unwanted there?
I did. I did. And don't ask me why, Evan. I have never understood it. That festival, I did a survey last year where I surveyed people as visitors as they left the festival, and I can absolutely prove that festival took $1.5 million minimum to the city of Canandaigua in 2 days. I just, I just don't understand.
You actually had a chance to, in that survey, the festival survey, 8,270 visitors last year.
Yes.
And just over 75% came to Canandaigua specifically to attend the festival.
Yes.
That's more than 6,000 people in Canandaigua who wouldn't normally have been there.
That's right. And that's huge for a city that size. I know that the merchants and the residents of Canandaigua are very disappointed to lose the festival. And I'm disappointed with them. I would have liked to have stayed, but it was just unworkable with the city government's demands.
Now, to be fair, I haven't had a chance to talk to the people in city government, and so let's not dwell too much more on that.
You know, I agree.
There are more pleasant
things. Let's go on to good things.
There are more pleasant things to talk about. And so how many total artists involved this year?
Right now, I have 102 artists confirmed and accepted into the festival for this year in the new location. I expect to have about 120 by the time it's all said and done. I know that there are several in the process of applying, and I always pick up a few artists at the last minute. So I expect to have at least 120 artists this year.
Is that a normal size?
About 140 last year.
Okay.
So it's slightly less than last year.
Okay.
But I'm still very happy with that number.
Oh, no question about it. And now, as you get closer, what has been the process? How do you bring in artists, and what are the different mediums, for example?
There'll be a little bit of everything at the festival. We've got ceramics, we've got wood, we've got several regionally known painters, photography, fiber clothing and leather, just about everything you can think of. Plus, we also have this year a significant portion of folks that make what I call marketplace goods, soaps, sauces, that type of thing, where they actually hand produce foodstuffs. So it's going to be a wide variety again this year. And we've got several businesses, especially out of the Webster area, that are going to come set up and demonstrate what they do. One of the dance studios is going to be there. The Girl Scouts are going to be there with face painting. There's several nonprofits that are going to be there talking about their good works. I'm very excited about everything that's going on. And the community has just been so welcoming. I can't say enough nice things.
Talking to Lynn Crawford, who is the director of the Waterfront Arts Festival. The 42nd annual festival will be at North Ponds Park in Webster on July 25th and 26th, 10 to 5 p.m. both days. $3 for admission. Kids 12 and under are free. And another big change is not just the location, but you can pour wine and beer.
I know. Isn't that going to be fun?
So you've got wine and beer, and where will the wine and beer be from?
Right now, we have Deer Run Winery and Arbor Hill Winery in. We're talking with Knucklehead Brewing, and I have invitations out to about 8 other wineries and breweries trying to find out whether their schedule will allow them participating. It's awfully late in the summer to be trying to set something like that up, so we'll just have to see how many people have availability that weekend. I'm hoping to at least have 6. Wineries, breweries, cider mills participating.
Okay. Haven't had a chance to offer that in the past?
No. The city of Canandaigua would never allow it on city property. Wouldn't even consider it.
Just out of principle?
Apparently.
Okay. So that's another change there. And how did you get involved? How is this a festival that became something that you were involved with?
In 2003, I was looking for a business to buy. And the founder of the festival, who was also the founder of the Austin Harvard Art Gallery in Pittsford, was looking to retire. So I ended up buying the combined business from her, and I ended up closing the Austin Harvard Gallery. It's so difficult to have a regional art gallery and actually keep your doors open. But I love doing the festival. I've always loved doing the festival, and I kept that. And that's the primary focus for my career right now.
Are you concerned that attendance will be lower just because you're in a new spot and people aren't used to it?
No, I'm not. I think the new location is going to pull enough new people from the Rochester and the eastern suburbs that it will be at least as big as it was down in Canandaigua. I'm hoping some of the folks from Canandaigua do come up. I have made an offer from the very beginning that anybody from Canandaigua that wants to come up to the festival this year is welcome to free admission to come in and join us. All they have to do is show me an ID at the gate, and they're in like Flynn. So I'm hoping that the residents of Canandaigua will continue to support the artists.
How has the effort to simply compete in festival season been? It's hard enough. I mean, there's a lot of different festivals in our area. We've talked about that with other festival organizers. You've done so well over the years. How do you do that? How do you compete and stand out during festival season?
It's such a strange cachet. I know a lot of artists. I've been doing this for several years now. I tend to go to all of the festivals and just generally chat them up and say, hi, how you doing? What's going on? You know, what's new? What's great? What do you like about this festival? What don't you like about this festival? And it all just goes in the hopper and rolls around. I enjoy doing projects. And when you come right down to it, a festival like this is a big, nasty project. it's a lot of people and a lot of things and a schedule and thousands of details. And I truly enjoy doing that. And I think that enjoyment reflects, I believe I have a good reputation with the artists, and that helps immensely.
You've got to love that kind of organizing work. That's about
it's
the
true.
About the last thing I would want to do.
It's true. It's not for everybody. It's not for the faint of heart.
No.
Some of the crazy things I end up doing would be a whole nother conversation.
The artists come from where?
They come from all over. This year, I currently have 10 states plus New York represented. The farthest away is probably Minnesota. A lot, I'd say probably 65%, maybe 70% are regionally known artists, you know, from the five-county area.
And are you an artist?
I am, but I don't show and I don't sell. So I do it for my own enjoyment. Yeah, there may be a day, but it's not here yet.
No, I think that's great. We've talked about on this program often the way we kind of drum art out of kids growing up, because it's like, if you're not going to do this for a career, why are you doing this? As opposed to artistic expression is in all of us in some form.
Yes.
And it doesn't have to be the kind of thing that ever ends up on a stage or in a public place.
Right. I might accidentally enjoy it less if I was trying to sell.
So are you allowed to tell us, do you paint?
I paint. Mm-hmm. I also do a little bit of jewelry. I've done a little bit of everything over the years.
Do you find yourself amazed at the work that you see at the Waterfront Festival?
I am astounded at the talent
that
we have in this area. It's just, the local painters just blow me away.
Well, the 42nd annual Waterfront Art Festival is coming up. It's the last full weekend in July, the 25th and the 26th. Are you online?
Yes, waterfrontartfestival.com.
There you go, waterfrontartfestival.com. $3 admission. Kids 12 and under are free. Lynn Crawford is the director. Have a great first year in Webster at North Ponds Park.
Thank you. It's going to be fun. Well, come on out and join us.
We'll see you the last weekend in July.
Excellent. Thanks, Evan.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Rochester Philharmonic Orchestra, performing its annual Patriotic Salute with music director Ward Stair, featuring pieces by Sousa and Tchaikovsky. The evening concludes with a fireworks display July 3rd at CMAC in Canandaigua. Tickets at Ticketmaster.com.
Welcome back to Arts Friday on Connections. You probably know that there are only 7 carillons in New York State, and I say that a little cheekily because you might not even know what a carillon is. I did not know what a carillon is until just recently, and there are only 7 in New York State. And all July long on Monday nights, well, you can go see carillon concerts. We're going to find out what it is and what's coming up starting Monday night with Doris Amon. Doris is the coordinator of the Carillon Society, an instructor of the University of Rochester's carillon class. What is a carillon, Doris?
Well, a carillon has 3 basic things that make it qualify as a carillon. First of all, it's made from bells. But the bells need to be in a chromatic series. They need to be touch sensitive. And there needs to be more than 23. So we're looking at 2 octaves of bells and more. They're tuned and designed to be played together. If it's less than 23, we call it a chime. And in that case, the chime can be a set of bells that are designed and founded to be played together, but they can be played from an electronic instrument or they can be played from a touch-controlled instrument either way. The original instrument at the University of Rochester was called a chime because it was 17 bells, and then it was later expanded to 19. It was played off from an electronic keyboard that was less than two octaves of keys. So it had an electronic assist to be able to play the bells with an electromagnetic impulse So the hammers were clapping against the bells. In that case, the bells were huge, like the lowest bell was 7,500 pounds. And so the sound of the bell was reverberating across the campus. And you would play the bells one at a time in sequence, not usually harmonically two at once, but you'd play just a delightful melody and have it be a single bell.
Okay, so carillon is bells, and what distinguishes carillon from chimes are the number. You mm-hmm. said 20, more than 23?
More than 23.
More than 23, and at the University of Rochester, the carillon is how many bells?
50.
50 bells.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see them where? Where are they?
You can't see them. I can't even see them. They're locked off, and only maybe once a year when we have a maintenance man come in to repair them. Does anybody actually go up there other than the facilities and the security people? The carillon cabin is below the roof, and that also is not open to public view for the most part. Just in the last year, they started making some carillon lessons be available to the community, and this is one of the things we would want to announce to everybody, is that if you want to learn how to play the carillon, you may. The Eastman Community Music School has made lessons available for people to learn how to play the carillon, and twice a year they've agreed to do carillon tours so that I can receive registration for people who are interested to go up and see the carillon, see how it's played for themselves, to be able to respond to the tour offering and come up and have a look and try it out for themselves.
How do you play something like a carillon?
Well, the carillon is played from a console. And if people want to see what the console looks like, they can either come to the library exhibit that's opened up to show people in Rushby's library at the same time as our concerts, which we're going to be having on Mondays in July, 7 p.m. Everybody's invited, and we hope you will all come.
Free concert starting Monday night at 7, yep.
The library exhibit is in there all the time. All you have to do is walk in through the beautiful front doors and go into the Q&I area, and it's right next to the Q&I desk to have a look at the display. I'll do a docent tour of the library exhibit just before the concerts on Mondays at 7 p.m., so I would start it at, like, if you come in at 6:40, I'll start the docent tours at that time. Just 15 minutes of running through and telling people about the carillon and what it looks like. To go back to your question, a console is a very large wooden frame that has broomstick handle batons coming out of it and pedals. So I play it with my fists and I play it with my feet so that I can grab a bell with each hand and a bell with each foot. And people think that I am hitting the batons, but I'm not. I'm tossing them. So I'm basically positioning them and throwing them down. It's very touch sensitive. Whatever mood I'm in, whatever music I'm playing, it's responding to my mood, so that every person that plays the carillon sounds different. My touch sounds different from the touch of my student. And if my student comes in and has had a hard day and is feeling angry about it, I can tell that they're angry in the way that they play. And we can do breath exercises to calm down, because we don't want to affect the whole campus with somebody who's playing music that is expressing themselves in an aggressive way. But we change the mood of the music by the time of the day and by our own mood and how we want to affect the campus by our music. So say, for instance, on this weekend coming up with July 4th, what would make sense is for us to play patriotic music, because that's what we're thinking about at this holiday. In the dead of the winter for the Lunar New Year, we had a Chinese New Year concert where the Chinese students who were learning how to play carillon expressed their culture and brought Chinese music to the carillon, and then let all of the Chinese community in Rochester know about it, so that there were people that were listening online and there were people that were in the parking lot listening to Chinese music being played on the carillon.
But when I think about the idea of learning the carillon, I don't have one in my house, and you know, there's only seven in New York State. What's the value? What's the allure of coming in and learning this kind of, and I was going to say just an instrument, as if it's mm-hmm. like having a piano at your house. But why learn it?
In my case, I love the bells. There is the fact that it's a public instrument means that whenever I play, everybody has to listen. There's a power in that, and I try to have my music be a healing kind of music, and I have my music be something that people will love to hear when they're hearing the bells play. Every time that I play, I have the feeling that there is an incredible amount of responsibility, honor, and privilege being involved in that. And sometimes it's overwhelming. When I enter the carillon room and I'm creating a relationship with the instrument before I play, there's always this feeling of this is my domain, so to speak. I just feel like a queen up there. And it's a very special relationship. It's more so than I've ever felt with any other instrument.
And there's very little like it in the world. We're talking only seven in New York State. Where are the other carillons in New York State?
Well, we have a carillon here in Rochester. Mm-hmm. And this carillon actually puts us on the map because we have been bringing carilloners from all over the world to play this instrument now for about 20 years. So a lot of carilloners know about Rochester through our instrument. And when we go into carillon circles, then we relate to each other, and they invite us to come play their carillons in the rest of the world. But also in New York State, there's a carillon in Alfred, New York, the Davis Memorial Carillon. And the concert series that we're doing, it plays Monday at 7 p.m. in Rochester, and then the artist goes to Alfred the next day and plays in Alfred Tuesdays on 7 p.m. So if somebody wants to experiment with hearing how different carillons sound, they can follow the artist, listen to him in Rochester at 7 p.m., go to Alfred the next day, listen to him play the instrument there at 7 p.m., and then follow him to Erie, PA the next day as well. Other carillons in New York State also include, there's the Nederlander Carillon at Calvary Episcopal Church in Williamsville. There's the carillon at Riverside Church in New York City. That was a gift by Rockefeller in honor of his mother, Laura Spellman. And there's a carillon in Albany that was a gift in memory of the soldiers that were fallen in World War I. And that carillon is played by volunteers and is owned by the government, and their budget is under the Albany Carillon. There's also a carillon at Rainbow Bridge in the Niagara Falls region. That one I don't believe is in play at this point. Outside of New York State, there's also a carillon in Ottawa that's part of the Parliament building. So that's a government carillon also.
And again, they have to have more than 23 bells, the one in Rochester with 50, but they vary?
Yes, yes. The carillon in Alfred has 48 bells, and it is built into a different key so that the bells are lower than ours.
How do you go from one to the other to play it? I mean, I could pick up an acoustic guitar and play a few chords, mm-hmm. and I could pick up another acoustic guitar. It may have a little different action, but I can still play the chords. There's not a different number of strings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you go from carillon to carillon if there's a different number of bells?
Well, there's a consistency in the keyboard, and that the keyboard's set up something like a piano would be. So the batons are set up. If you think of the piano, you have the white keys and the black keys. Then the batons are set up in a white key formation and a black key formation, and the pedals will be duplicating the white keys and the black keys. So there's consistency in the keyboard as far as the way that it's set up. But the actual number of bells and the sequencing, there's a chromatic sequence in the center of the instrument, but it might start, in, for instance, ours starts with a G and then a B flat. There's a bourdon and a sub-bourdon. And then our first bell that's in a chromatic sequence is the C, then there's not a C sharp, then there's a D. But then there's a D sharp and it's chromatic from there on. Whereas down at the Alfred Carillon, it starts with C, then it doesn't have a C sharp, then it has a D, then it doesn't have a D sharp, then it has an E, then it has an F, and it's chromatic from then on. So when I switch from Rochester and I go down to play at Alfred, I'm going to choose slightly different music, or I'm going to have to adjust my music to make the music work on the instrument.
Is that just a quirk of the instrument? You just get used to it. Yeah, it's part of the charm of a carillon, huh?
Part of the charm. It makes it infinitely interesting to go from instrument to instrument.
And I'm trying to think of, you know, an instrument with seven total instruments in New York State must have tremendous history. They go back how long, carillons?
Well, carillons in the United States were being built as a result of we had gone to Europe to fight in World War I, and people coming back had realized that carillons in Europe were wonderful to listen to. And they had a reason for building them as memorials to people who had died in World War I. And they also had a reason to build carillons because we were trying to help Europe recover from World War I. So our investment in carillons was actually helping Europe, the foundries in Europe, to rebuild. The foundries that build bells are peacetime foundries. In war, they build armaments, but in peace they build carillons and they found bells. So bells are a peacetime instrument and a peacetime investment. Our heart is connected to bells in that because we do them for memorials. They cost so much money that people have to either use an inheritance or they have to pool their money so a community will work together to buy bells. And so also when you got to World War II, we found that some of the bells were being taken down and melted down for cannons. And that was one of the things that, as Germany was starting to occupy towns, that was a way that they demoralized the community, was to take down their bells and break them, crash them, and turn them into weapons. So in the United States in the 1920s, we had discovered that bells were wonderful, and so we were learning how to tune them. The Manili Company from outside of Troy, New York, was developing the technical expertise to be able to tune bells and to tune them in a series. And then finally, around 1930, they were able to put together a carillon in series. Think about it. If you're going to tune a bell, what you're doing is scraping the interior of the bell profile to remove minute shreds of metal in certain places to control the overtones of the bell. When you strike a bell, it's not just one sound. It's going to be the strike, and then an octave below the strike is the hum tone, and then there will be a minor third overtone above the note that you're striking. That's what creates the unique sound of the bell. Most instruments are going to have a major third overtone, but the bell has a minor third, and then it has a fifth, and then it has an octave, and then it has a sequence of more overtones above that. So every time I strike one bell, I'm actually hearing multiple notes. And then because there's nothing to stop the sound of that bell, it's an infinite sound wave that just keeps going and going and going. When I add another bell, I'm adding additional notes in sequence on top of that. So when we compose for carillon, we have to think about the fact that there is this sculptural building of sound that we're doing. And when they create a bell and they found a bell, then they're very carefully tuning those overtones all across the interior profile of the bell. And they have to have a lathe that's big enough to handle a bell that's, what, 7,000 pounds in order to tune that then? It's a huge lathe. So the expertise that was growing in the 1920s allowed them to be able to do this. And the Manili bells are still here. We have a Manili bell set at the Third Presbyterian Church here in Rochester. We have another Manili bell set at the Rochester Crozer. And we have several single Manili bells also in town and around New York State. And so the Riverside carillon, for instance, as an investment by Rockefeller, was a tremendous help to England, or to the foundry that it gave a great deal of money to that foundry to be able to recuperate from World War I.
It's remarkable learning some of the history of an instrument unlike any other. It's called a carillon. And starting Monday night, this coming Monday at 7 p.m., the University of Rochester has a series of free outdoor concerts, carillon concerts, all throughout the month of July. So every Monday night at 7, the free outdoor shows are on the Eastman Quad on University of Rochester's River Campus, and it's professional carilloners who are playing the bells for those free concerts, and I know they hope you come out for that. I'm talking to Doris Amon, who's a coordinator of the Carillon Society.
And you're trying to raise money for that?
oh, we would love to raise money for that. We would love for people to have an appreciation for the culture that the bells bring to our community. Our Dutch community, they're related to the people who love Europe. It's like a taste of Europe to go to these concerts. You don't have to go all the way across the ocean. You can just come to Eastman Quad and have a slice of European culture in the evenings in July. Enjoy your summer. Have a perfect evening without having to spend all that money to go all the way across the ocean. But you can go across the ocean, too, if you want to.
So before I let you go, Doris, then, for our audience who wants to come out on Monday night, mm-hmm. again, just come out on Monday. It's free. Sit in the quad. Enjoy free concerts on Monday nights in July, right?
That's right.
Okay. And professional caroliners performing. And for those who may want to actually come out and take lessons and learn how to do it or you kind of get involved, how do they do that?
I'll be there at the concert. Look for the very, very tall lady walking around. I'm not asking for surveys. I'm not doing political things. I'm just greeting the audience and saying hello. I'll answer any questions you have about the carillon. I'll show you materials. I'll take you into the library and show you the library exhibit and talk to you about it. I'm very friendly. If people want to reach me online, my email address is doris.aman@gmail.com. My last name is spelled A-M-A-N, and I'd love to hear from you.
Have fun on Monday and every Monday in July. And thanks for telling us about an instrument that so many of us have maybe never seen before, but we've probably heard it.
Yes, when I first came to Rochester, I knew there was a carillon here, and I looked in vain for it.
You can hear it.
You can hear
it. You can't not hear it. Thank you, Doris.
Okay, thank you.